Welcome to the Bluegrass Bammer podcast. I'm Stephanie Boyd, your host. In case you didn't know, Bammer stands for Badass Mother Runner. This podcast will bring you stories from across Kentucky and beyond about badass women running and the people that support them. Let's get started. Hey guys, it's Stephanie, and I'm here with a mini episode of the Bluegrass Bammer podcast today. First of all, I have to apologize. I have been gone for so long. Actually, I haven't been gone. I've just been absent from the podcast for a little bit. I had to step back around the holidays and reprioritize some things. You know, the holidays are a busy, busy time for everybody, but I just had to step away from the podcast for a minute and focus on some other projects and work, you know, the thing that actually pays my bills. And also, I had to start really diving deep into my training for my first 1-to-100-mile race, and that is why I'm here today. That's what the episode is about. We're going to talk about where I've been and what I've been training for in my mini episode. But before we jump right in, I just want to tell everybody that I hope that you stick with me this year. We're going to have a lot of new fun episodes on the podcast. We're going to switch up the style of some of the episodes, and I'm really looking forward to bringing some of the guests onto the show that I've been trying to get on for a little bit now. So I'm really, really excited about the way things are going to shape up. And my race is actually coming up March the 18th. And so once that race is over and I finish, I'm going to take a break from long distance running, at least until the fall. And so I'm going to have more time to concentrate on serving you all the latest episodes of the podcast. So thanks for sticking with me. Thanks for coming back and listening to this mini episode. And let's just get into it. So as I was thinking about what I was going to say to you all, besides just apologizing for the absence in the show, I wanted to try to think of just really some of the positives that have come out of my training. Because I think that every time we go into a training cycle and we think about what, you know, we just have this plan in front of us when we start, and it's a perfect plan in our minds and we have it all figured out. And then what really happens is life happens. Things occur that mess with the training plan and mess with your great plan. And you have to be able to know how to deal with those things when they come up. And that can be hard for some people. I think when I started running about 10 or 12 years ago, I followed a training plan to the T. Whatever the training plan said for that day, I did it. And that, you know, that might mean I have to wake up 3 hours earlier than normal. That might mean that I have to skip doing something fun with one of my friends because I needed to get my run in, you know. And so much has changed since that first training plan. And, you know, part of that is just because once you've trained for so many different events, you realize you don't have a lot of control over what happens in your life outside of your training plan, and you have to be flexible. So I wanted to, and there's so much positivity in that. It's kind of the way that I wanted to approach the episode for today. And so that's kind of where we're going to start. I just have a few key points that I want to share with you all. And I think these are relevant for actually any distance that you're training for, not just a 100-mile race. That just happens to be what I've learned out of all of my training blocks for this particular training plan, and wanted to share it with you. So I hope as you're listening to this, whether you're running or in the car driving, or maybe at home in your office, that you'll, one, I can envision some of you are listening to this and you're smiling and nodding your head because you totally get it. You totally have been there and you understand what I'm saying. Or two, you certainly might have the reaction of, okay, maybe I need to put that in a mental note somewhere and file away for later. So either you're going to totally relate to some of this, or you're going to take something away from you or something away from this episode that you can, you know, give to your mental toolbox for later, your mental toolkit for later, which we've talked about toolkits before. So get ready to pack some things up in your toolkit, hopefully to use for later. And also, after the episode is over, I want you all to drop me a note. You can do that through any app that you're listening to. There's a way to be able to leave me a video or an audio recording of just what you thought about the episode. Did you learn anything? Or do you have any wisdom that you want to lend that maybe wasn't a part of this podcast? I want to hear from you and hopefully be able to include some of that in a later episode. So let's just jump into it. Here are some of the things that I have learned or relearned as part of my 100 miler training. Now, for those of you who haven't been keeping up or don't know much about my training plan, I started my training plan officially in October of 2022, maybe even late September. But I know that sounds like a while, but I actually take the summers off from like a rigorous training plan. I do not like to run in the summer in the heat. So I keep like a base mileage of maybe like 10 to 20 miles a week, but I don't do a lot of running. Not like I do in the fall and the winter. Winter is like my favorite time to run. So I just started kind of in September building back up my base and getting a good solid 20 to 30 miles a week. And then started with a 20-week training plan that made the assumption that I had sort of built my base. So that training plan actually was a training plan that I had found online. Just full transparency, I don't have a coach. I've never actually had a coach for any of the races I've trained for. And I don't know why, other than I'm just never thought that I needed a coach. I'm not an elite athlete. I don't get paid to race, you know, so I've just never thought of myself as needing a coach. But I have lots of running friends who are always happy to give me advice. And so I kind of found a couple of 100 mile training plans and sent them, in particular, a couple of them to one of my friends, Jeanette, who took a look at them and gave me some feedback and kind of took the base of one of the plans and then created this Frankenstein plan. And that's kind of my first tip, is that not all training plans are created equal. If you actually have a coach who's created a training plan for you, that is one thing. But if you're just looking to develop a training plan for your race, whatever it is, a 5K, 10K, half marathon, 50 miler, you know, one of the things that I say is not, you know, you don't necessarily have to take that training plan that you found online or in a book and follow that to a T. There's definitely needs to be some flexibility there and some individualization based on who you are as a runner and what your needs are and what you know that you can contribute to the training plan. So I'm an older female. So, and when I say older, and that's all relative, right? But like these, a lot of plans that are written online aren't for 46-year-old perimenopausal women. And lots of times some of these plans are so generic that you can't tell if this is for a trail or a road race. Like there are some differences. So I know that going into it, and I have to really think about what my needs are as a female runner who is 46, who is a professional, that has a day job, that has two very active children, and has a husband who would like to see me every now and then at home. And also I have a family, you know, my extended family, and lots of other things that I like to do outside of running. And so you have to take all of that into account. So I think my first tip is really just use the training plan as a guide. It's a guide. Is it, you know, 100% you have to follow it to a T? No, there can be some flexibility there. Use it as a guide. You know, make sure that you've got training blocks built in for builds and then pullbacks. Make sure that you're running the appropriate amount of weekly mileage for the race distance. And then from there, know there are going to be days where you might have 6 miles on your training plan, but you're only going to get in four. There might be a week where you're sick and you can't run at all because life happens. And just know that that training plan is there as a guide. I also tend to build in a couple extra weeks into my training plan in case I feel like I do need to take that week off, or there's a vacation, or there's something happening, I won't feel behind and it won't stress me out. So I kind of give myself a cushion. That's another thing I do with training plans. But certainly just know that training plans are a guide. They're not the end all be all, and you can be flexible with them and be successful and meet the goal that you have for yourself for your race. So that's number one. Number two is, I would say, kind of along the same line with the training plan, is to make sure that you fit in cross training and strength training into your schedule. And this is a hard one for a lot of people. And I know the first couple of half marathons that I trained for, I did not do this well. And it showed. And once I decided I was going to be really committed to cross training and strength training with some of the shorter distances before running ultra marathons, I could see the difference. I could see the payoff. And so I can't tell people enough about, you know, making sure you're getting in cross training and strength training. As my 100 mile training plan progressed, in the beginning, I found it very easy to work out, do strength training or cross training at 3 to 4 days a week. Then when I started to really increase my mileage, I started to get a little too relaxed with the cross training and the strength training. And I recognized this at a certain point in my training plan and tried to flip really quickly back to what I was doing maybe weeks before. And in that moment, I was also in a high mileage part of my training plan. I was in a building block, and it was a recipe for disaster. I have never, knock on wood, had a running injury, thankfully, and up until this point. But in the end of October, I was completing a trail run because I had a trail race in November with a group of friends, and I was out running and I fell on the trail, which is not uncommon for me. And if you run enough trails, you eventually fall. I think everybody, it's happened to more than once. It definitely has happened to me more than once. But when I fell, I made sure that I didn't try to catch myself with my hands or my arms because I didn't want to break anything. And so I kind of did the soft roll, but I rolled to my right and on my hip. And it took me a minute to collect myself. And when I got up, we were probably 6 miles into a 7 mile run. I mean, we were almost done with the run. I probably should have walked back to the car, but I didn't. I ran, just continued, kind of shook myself off and finished the run. Got back to the car, didn't stretch, got in the car and came home. And from that point on, I struggled with a little bit of hip pain and probably should have seen someone right away. And I did not. So I continued to progress through my training, and eventually the hip pain went away. The race that I did in November, I felt it. There was 22 miles to this trail run, and I felt it the last half of those miles. So it wasn't completely gone. And so that I just went home and rested for a whole week. I took a whole week off from my training plan, felt better, and then came back and just started right back where I'd left off with my training plan. That's the point where I should have probably sought out a professional to just get an assessment and make sure that I was ready to return to running and that I hadn't really done anything major. But I didn't, continue to run, backed off of my strength training for a little bit at that time, and then realized in January that I was not doing myself any favors, started strength training full force again, and went out for a run, 20 mile run, came home on a Saturday, stepped out of my car, and a shooting pain went up my left foot into my left leg, which is the opposite leg that I fell onto when I had my trail fall in October. And that's when I knew I probably needed to go see somebody. To me, pain is a sign. Your body is telling you that there's something wrong. I don't have pain very often when I'm running or after I'm running. And so this was a big red flag for me. Long story short, I probably did a lot more damage than I needed to with starting back up, ramping up a big strength training, cross training regimen into my longer mileage weeks, those higher mileage weeks. I had a posterior shin splint and also had an issue with my heel that is just now resolving. And I mean, we're talking weeks later, but it required me to go to a physical therapist and orthopedic specialist. And I feel great now, which is good because my race is soon. but I probably wasted a lot of time and did myself a big disservice by not getting things checked out when I fell. So, I should have not let go of the cross training. Those things would have went hand in hand if I'd went to see a physical therapist or someone else. So that's my thought process to you, is to make sure when you're looking at a training plan that you are building in time for strength training and you have some cross training built in. I love cross training. I love to, substitute for a run, a longer bike ride or a swim. It makes me feel stronger and it makes my body feel more prepared. So think about those things when you're building your training plan. And with that, just know that you might need to modify your training run sometime along the way. And I think I talked about that a little bit before, but sometimes things don't go your way. Sometimes the training plan has a suggestion for you that you can't actually make happen. For example, I had a 50 mile race as part of one of my build weeks in February, and there just weren't any 50 mile races around at that time. And I did not want to travel because I knew I would be traveling in March for my other race, and I just didn't want to be away from my family. So one of the things that my friend suggested was to just do a marathon on Saturday and a marathon on Sunday. And that's what I did instead of 50 mile. I've already ran the 50 mile distance. I know what that feels like. I know mentally what that requires and physically. And so for me, it was just about making sure that I was continuing to keep up with my mileage for the week and work on refining some of the things that I would need to make sure I have dialed in for the race during those two back-to-back long runs. So, whether that's nutrition, whether that's gear, whether that's, shoes, all of those kinds of things. That's what I did. So I really modified my training plan a couple of times. And that's one example where I was nervous to do that, but also I knew that it was okay for me to do that because I had the experience of running a 50 mile race. And I knew I didn't need to do that in order to be successful with training for a 100 mile race. So just again, it's all about flexibility and knowing that you can go away from that training plan a little bit and modify as you need to and still be pretty successful with your training. So I think I mentioned nutrition, and this one I can't talk about enough. It could be its own series of podcasts. I am not a professional in the world of nutrition. I'm not a registered dietitian. I'm not a sports nutritionist. I don't pretend to be one. Luckily, I have access to a registered dietitian. And that has made, I think, probably the world of difference for me in most of my racing. If I have a particular goal or not, nutrition is a consistent high priority for me. That is just a way to take care of my body so that I have some longevity in my running life. But when you do think about nutrition as it relates to training, consistently what I have read and what I've been told by registered dietitians is people consistently undernourish themselves. They are consistently at a calorie deficit when they're in a training cycle, but they don't know that. And so if there are injuries or there is fatigue, lots of times people think it's related to the training itself, and it's actually the calorie deficit, the nutrition deficit that's the issue. So I highly recommend that if you have never seen a dietitian before and you're thinking about trying a new distance or you're thinking about setting a PR, that you talk with someone who has that degree and has that background, and that you at least get a consult with them to make sure that you're on the right track. Probably 8 times or 9 times out of 10, the dietitian is going to tell you that you're not getting adequate amount of calories or an adequate amount of nutrition, nutrients for whatever it is you're training for. And it's a game changer once you figure out how to fix that. And it will help with a lot of issues that we hear runners talk about. Fatigue is one. Weight issues is another. digestive or GI upset is another. So if you are able to talk with someone who understands the chemical interaction between food and your body, jump on it. And I highly encourage you to see a dietitian. And that means not someone who has a certificate, not someone who has taken a class, but really actually someone who has a degree in dietetics. Let them help you. Their knowledge base is broad and they understand the chemical reactions that food have with your body. So they're great. And they can definitely help you if you have other diagnoses that may affect the way food interacts with your body. Not everyone who is a nutritionist or has a certificate in nutrition has that kind of background. A registered dietitian is a clinician. They are a clinical position. And so I just can't say enough about their role in the world of sports, in the world of running. And we have lots of great dietitians here in the area that can help with these kinds of issues. So it's worth the money to spend on even just that one consult to let you know that you were getting maybe some things right, but there were a lot of things that you had a knowledge deficit. And they're things that are normally easy to correct. It can be very helpful in your training and very helpful for your physical and mental health. So nutrition, that's a big one. That's a tip. And I'm always going to support you seeing a registered dietitian, even if you aren't running in between a training cycle, go then, because then you can really fine tune some things before you even start a training plan, which is wonderful. Okay, two more things I want to mention. So this is the 1, 2, 3, 4. This is the fifth thing. I think I have six things that I want to talk about. One thing I learned about training for longer distances, including this 100-mile race, is it's really important to try to simulate. For me, it's really important to try to simulate race day conditions. And what I mean by that is an ultramarathon is not, you know, it's not a start time of 7 or 8 a.m. and you're done by noon for the most part, unless you're super fast. But, you know, if you're thinking about training for a half marathon or a marathon, most of those, the start times are 7 or 8 and you're done in 2 to 4 hours or 3 to 5 hours. With an ultramarathon, you're going for longer amounts of time, obviously, and you're going to have less rest for the duration of the race. And so for me, it was really important to kind of play around with that a little bit in two ways. One, doing some runs where I'm sleep deprived. I have to have 8 hours of sleep. I am that person that has to have 8 hours of sleep or I feel like a zombie. So I like to try to go get up earlier for some of my long runs and start earlier than I normally would. So therefore I'm getting less sleep. And this is this isn't every long run. This is just, you know, a couple of times and closer to the race, but, you know, kind of getting that sleep deprived feel, maybe going out and running on, at a time of day that I know I'm normally sluggish. So 1:30 PM to 4:30 PM is a horrible time for me to try to start a run. I am so sluggish around 2 p.m. in the afternoon. So I tried to shift some of my weekly runs or my recovery run days to the mid-afternoon start time, just to have that feeling of running and being in a part of the day that is normally very difficult for me to function. And the weekends where I had, for example, that 50-mile race weekend where I did a marathon and then the next day ran led 24 miles or whatever, I didn't get like a full 8 hours of rest in between that. I really didn't. I don't know if that's good or bad, but for me mentally, it was just a way for me to try to simulate some exhaustion. Now, granted, a 50-mile race that I did a couple years ago, it started at 8 p.m. and I ran that. It took me 11 hours to finish that race. That was tough because there's where you're getting that simulation of you being up all night. But I'd only run 50 miles in the nighttime, not 100. So it's really hard to obviously replicate that to, you know, to the exact science. But for me, it was more of just building my mental kit, my mental toolbox, knowing that I had done some of this, because when I'm in the race and I'm tired, I can remind myself that I've done this, I've done this, I've done this to prepare for this time of the race. And so for me, that really lends a positive talk, some positive self-talk that I need in order to get me through or push me through. So I totally recommend that you try that if you're going for a longer distance and you're going to be running through the nighttime, or even just late afternoon, or a time you're not normally running, because we all have these weak periods, or these weak spots. And for me, it's sleep deprivation and running in the late afternoon. So I was trying to hit some of those notes. You know, you can't control everything like the weather, but some of the things that you can't, but you can still train in all kinds of weather so that mentally you know what that feels like and it's not so taxing on you when it does happen. Same thing here for me. It was like, okay, let me be exhausted. Let me run in the middle of the night so that I know what that feels like. And it's not the first time when I'm in the race environment itself. So for me, it's more of a mental game, and it really helps me dig deep when I'm out in the middle of a race and have that condition pop up again. Like, I can remind myself, you've kind of tried to do this before, or you've done this before, you can do this again. So just that positive mindset's important. And then that, last but not least, and I think this is the thing that kind of wraps everything up in a bow. So all of your training, dialing in on your nutrition, coming up with some tips and tricks like to get you through the race and build your mental toolbox and get some things in there that maybe, you know, test them out before race day, is really just having a reminder of what motivates you to do this thing in the first place. Because sometimes in a race, that's all you have. When you feel like you've given, like the gas tank is low, you're tired, you wonder when this race is going to be over, you can sometimes go to a darker place in your mind. Having that motivation where you can actually, it's a tangible thing. So whether you write it on the inside of your wrist, whether you, sometimes I will have my family members write on like small pieces of paper, motivational sayings or things they know are important to me, and I put them in my pack and we'll pull one out every hour and read it. Just what is your why? Why are you doing this race? And having a note somewhere or something visible. Some people go as far as to get a tattoo of their motivation on them, and it's there and they know it's there and they can refer to that during the race. I plan at my 100 mile race to do some of those things where my family or and my friends write down notes for me to read as I'm running through the night. I'm going to make a poster with some things that some friends have sent me to hang up at the tent where my crew will be, so that I can see those things and really try to remind the people that are at the race there to support me, to remind me verbally of those things, especially if I'm at a low point. But it can be when you're at a high point too, because that just feeds back into that positive. Yeah, I'm going to do this. I'm doing this for A, B, and C. I've totally got this. So I think the motivation is that big bow that you wrap and the whole package up with and take it with you to race day, because sometimes that is the thing that will push you forward more than what you realized. Sometimes people will, you know, dedicate their race to a person that they love, someone that they've lost. The motivation can be lots of things. Sometimes you're running for a charity. Sometimes you're running for a friend. Sometimes you're running for you because you've overcome a huge obstacle in your life. And you know that in your brain, but when it's late at night or you've been running for a long time, it's not front and center. And so having it where you can read it or someone can remind you or read it to you is really, really powerful. So I'm just lending that out to you as a suggestion or a tip. And you can use that for any distance race that you run. I think that it's really, really helpful. It's akin to those signs you see on the side of the road at road marathons. Like, they're really popular, or road half marathons, where they hold up signs that are like, there's beer at the end, you know, whatever it is, you know, just pack it up and take it with you so you can visibly see that when you need to, or hear that when you need to during the race, can really be a game changer. So yeah, that's it. I'm trying to take all of these things over the whole training cycle for this 100 miler and put them to good use and continue to build in my toolkit. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Bluegrass Bammer podcast. If you like what you've heard, hit subscribe to the podcast so you can catch the next episode when it's live. Also, you can find me on my blog. That is bluegrassbammer.wordpress.com. Or you can follow me at Bluegrass Bammer on Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook. See you next time, and until then, happy running!